Welcome inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio as we are coming to you here in the month of December, already getting ready to say goodbye to 2022. It is Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you, and welcome back in, sir. It feels like it's been a while, because it has been a while, but when we do get a chance to get back into the studio, it feels oh so good.
Well, it's been a while, but it shouldn't have been a while. We've been on hiatus due to illness here for the last couple. First, you were sick, then our guest tonight had a sick family at home.
A couple different times we had to reschedule.
Yeah, so this is actually going into, I think, the third week of when we were supposed to have this show
up. Yeah, unfortunately, 'tis the season. There's some wicked upper respiratory thing going on right now. They don't use that C word anymore. They just call it a respiratory thing. And, I mean, even some of our local schools here, three local schools are closed right now for the next 2 days due to illness.
So. I think that's just the flu bug going around, as tends to happen this time of year here in the Great White North, and I'm sure many other parts of the country.
Yep, that it does. And so, you know, wishing everyone well. But the fact that I've already had it, and I've been around a bunch of people who are sick now, I think I'm good. I think my body has got the natural immunity, so knock on wood.
I have not, so you stay the hell over on that side of the studio, and I'll stay over here, and we'll all be good.
Well, the fact that you're sitting in a hazmat suit right now, too, I think is going to help you. You're fine.
No, it doesn't affect the voice at all, huh?
No, it's coming through just fine.
Excellent.
Yeah, so how was your Thanksgiving? Good?
Yeah, no complaints. Yeah. You know, the usual. Just did a nice, low-key family dinner at my sister's and watched a little bit of football, and unfortunately, the Lions did not pull through that day.
But boy, did they battle.
That's the only game that they've lost lately.
Yeah, they're on a great streak right now. They just crushed Jacksonville last weekend, and they're looking all right, and we're ahead of the Green Bay Packers in the standings,
so
that's all I care about.
Yes, that's you know, at the end of the day, that's what really matters.
Isn't that the truth? Amen to that. But it is great to be back into the studios to bring you another version of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by Eagle Play. Remember, you can find us right there at our home of Eagle Play at EagleRadio951.com. or on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher. We are everywhere, and we do plan. The plan right now is to also have a very special holiday edition of Creaking Door still coming out this month.
Fingers crossed.
Yes, more on that coming up. But right now, we want to do a little thing we call Paranews, where we bring you our favorite stories in the paranormal and the weird. Brad, you can kick it off, sir.
Well, as UFOs keep swirling around the forefront, and it seems to be more and more legitimized by the government nowadays, we're looking at a national UFO archive coming to New Mexico soon.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, a group of historians and archivists have announced plans to open a new national archive in the Albuquerque area, focusing on unidentified aerial phenomena, as they're calling them nowadays. Led by author and researcher David Marler, the National UFO Historical Records Center will establish the largest historical archive dedicated to the preservation and centralization of UFO/UAPs. That's information that's being gathered in the United States.
Okay.
At a presentation announcing the new archive during International UFO Congress in Phoenix, Marler said, "What's the importance of all this? Well, looking at the historical cases, providing context for what we're hearing about today, well, it demonstrates that there's a rich, diverse history of the UFO phenomena wherever you look, whether it's in newspapers, government documents, historical archives, etc. I was thinking about this a while back. When you look at the UFO subject, we have a National UFO Reporting Center. That's great. And we also have the National Archives, okay? But the one thing we don't have is you put these two ideas together and there's no National Archives of Ufology, despite the need for one."
Hmm.
So it's kind of like the old Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. You got your chocolate and my peanut butter?
Yeah, exactly.
So we're putting these two together. The archive is set to include official and civilian case files, audio and video recordings, correspondence, photographs, books, magazines, news clippings, research notes, microfilm, along with digital and physical artifacts, documents from the National Investigations Committee on Aerial Phenomena, the Center for UFO Studies, and J. Allen Hynek's personal Project Blue Book files. So something to look forward to coming here, definitely for the UFO ufology crowd.
Yeah, I agree. I do like where the whole study of ufology is going right now. It seems like it's really picked up some momentum.
It's taking more of that scientific turn again. It seems like it kind of comes in waves, but I think at the point that now you've got those Navy videos out and different collaboration with the government, all of these studies, I think you're going to see it become more mainstream.
I agree, and
I
hope so.
I think it's good.
Yep, absolutely. I'm going to stay on the topic of UFOs as well. Ufologists often report the sightings of unidentified flying objects near the sun. But this time, it seems it might be a little bit different according to this one. Famous ufologist Scott Waring, he is from England. He's across the pond. He's from the England side of things. He claims he has discovered a UFO that literally glides across the surface and has been hiding out on the surface of the sun for the last year.
Be a little toasty.
Yeah, it would. According to the researcher, an object shaped like a triangle has been gliding over the surface of the sun for more than a year. He stated this referring to the images of HelioViewer. Waring believes that the size of the object is simply huge, the size of the moon, he says. The ufologist said that he contacted NASA scientists through his Twitter account in the hope of getting an explanation for this phenomena, but did not wait for a response from them. Moreover, they do not answer at all, the ufologist reports. They just don't get back to you. However, whatever it is, the UFO is triangular in shape and has been cruising there for many years, as evidenced by footage from NASA cameras from years ago, which he has a YouTube video of it to show that it's been there. The object is black, which means it is not hot, retaining a cooler temperature even as it glides across the sun. And most interestingly, it's periodically returns to its original position, being in the field of the view of the Earth. Referring to the observation data, Scott Waring calls them indisputable evidence of the presence in the solar system of extraterrestrial civilizations that are monitoring the Earth.
And they are inhabiting the sun now.
Yeah.
That one's a little out there for me.
I mean, I understand moving maybe to Florida, but to the sun? That's a bit much,
would definitely save on tanning rates.
That would. Yeah, that one not a scientific basis here, for sure. Yeah.
Well, we're going to bring you right back down to terra firma and talk a little bit of World War II history and the ghost of Italy's probably most infamous man, Mussolini. Seems to still be kicking around, according to CNN. Showcasing fascist dictator Benito Mussolini's family uniform, his beloved motorbike, an iron cradle, and a spooky bedroom mirror, Villa Carpegna is clearly a museum unafraid of the dark side of history. But if the ick factor of visiting a place with connections to Adolf Hitler's wartime ally isn't enough for you, well, the owners of the mansion in Italy's northernmost region say there's also a strong chance of bumping into Mussolini's ghost.
Oh, my.
Yes. Located in Carpegna, a tiny district in the city of Forli, the property is rumored to be haunted by several ghosts of the Mussolini family.
Oh.
The late Italian.
It's a family thing.
Yeah. It seems to be. Locals claim to have proof of this as well.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Since it was purchased by an Italian businessman in 2000, its new owners and other invited guests claim to have experienced intense paranormal activities and supernatural happenings, some of which a team of self-proclaimed Ghostbusters say it witnessed and recorded. This place is alive with their presence. They're all still here, and we can feel them. They're constantly watching us, says Domenico Morosini, the current owner and operator. I feel they respect us. We are not afraid, but we don't want to disturb these spirits, so I avoid entering the villa when it's nighttime.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because they only come out at night.
Correct.
Yeah.
The couple, who live in an adjacent new building on the mansion's estate, spent years on a global scavenger hunt to track and recover lost original pieces that once belonged to the Mussolini family, which they've used to furnish the villa. After purchasing one of Mussolini's historical uniforms at an auction in the United States, Morosini says he took it back to the mansion, spreading it out on the bed Mussolini shared with his wife, the same bed in which she died. That day, there was a medium with us, and the person felt sick, had to sit down, and whispered, "He is here." Straight after, the dark shadow of Mussolini's face appeared in the bedroom mirror and has been there since, as if it were printed on the glass. More than a mere reflection, adds Morosini. This kind of reminds me of one of our cases at Sichua Point Lighthouse.
Yes, I was where just sitting here thinking
the face that forms in the mirror. But yeah. I digress. Tourists on guided tours of the villa are invited to peer into the shadowy face, too, to get a glimpse of the distinctive square jaw, high forehead, and prominent nose of the infamous dictator, who was executed as he tried to flee the country with his girlfriend in the final days of World War II back in 1945. Morosini says he has a passion for memorabilia from the past and bought the mansion from one of Mussolini's sons, extensively renovating it with antique furniture and decor.
All right. So, well, I suppose if I could speak with Mussolini, I would ask him, what the hell were you thinking? Why did you get involved with the bad guys? But, all right.
Well, it's one of those, historic haunts.
Yes.
That we you and I know both really enjoy getting into. The basis for hauntings being, whether it be items, whether it be the house itself, or just that person is still kicking around there. So
you got it.
Yes.
All right, good stuff. We're going to finish here with paranormal news. I'm going to go with a ghost story as well. Is it possible England has its own conjuring house?
No.
Oh, well, let's see.
There you go.
Let's find out. It's over and done with. It's called UK's most exorcised home. Tore the family apart and destroyed the husband. A mum spent 7 spooky years plagued by supernatural events in a terrifying farmhouse dubbed Britain's most exorcised home. Liz Rich claims she was confronted by a menacing hooded figure and was left fearing for her life during the hauntings. She and husband Bill moved into Heal Fanag, an isolated farmhouse near Brecon Beacons in South Wales, in 1989 to bring up their family. But the couple and their young children were quickly confronted by a series of sinister paranormal oddities, including energy surges, dead farm animals, and sightings of two spirits, an old woman who would watch the children play, and a terrifying hooded figure without a face. Seeking solace in the church, the house nicknamed Hellfire Farm was exorcised repeatedly. Liz reckons hundreds of times, but still the problems lingered. Liz herself says she was even possessed in the kitchen of the property. Liz, now 63, said, if you've ever experienced anything like this, if you haven't ever experienced something like this, it must sound like we're making it up, but none of it was made up. None of it. It was so insidious and so gradual that we simply adapted to it and didn't even realize. You could sense something before the real horrors came. Sometimes the house would level out, but then something would happen and it would become more claustrophobic and more oppressive, like an energy building up. We were living in an unreality. When you came home, you didn't know what was going to happen next. Liz's experiences apparently were featured in a 1996 book by Mark Chadbourne named Testimony. And in this, Liz talks about Hoel Fanag's long association with witchcraft and magic. So the backstory, at least from what Hollywood told us of The Conjuring, sounds similar, but we know the backstory of the actual Conjuring house is different than what Hollywood told us. But
I think the name Hellfire Farm has some commercial value.
I was just going to say.
That's really right out there waiting.
Yep. I think we're going to be watching this story. I do believe I wouldn't be surprised if it doesn't come to a big screen to us soon. But very interesting stuff there.
Yeah.
UK's most exercised home. All right. There we go. Wrapping up today's paranews. And we're going to take a quick break now, Brad. When we come back, we're going to be welcoming in a first-timer inside the creaking door.
Yeah, and somebody, as I said, we've been trying to have on for a few weeks now, but Mr. Shane Pittman will be joining us today. We'll be talking Holzer Files. We'll be talking 28 Days Haunted.
Yep.
And everything else Shane's got going.
You got it, which he's a busy man right now, so looking forward to opening the creaking door for Shane Pittman coming up next right here. This is Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by Eagle Play. Think of Michigan's Upper Peninsula as the scary attic sitting there above the rest of the state. I can think of no better guides to take you inside the history and lore than the guys of the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. Those are the words from writer and lead researcher for the hit TV show Ghost Adventures, Jeff Belanger. For over 20 years, the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society has dedicated their lives to researching the paranormal. And now, some of their favorite cases are brought to life on the pages of their
their debut book, Uppernatural Haunts. Come inside these pages with the team as they share intimately the history of each location and their experiences during their investigation. Learn their techniques and some of the most intense moments they have faced. True stories and true accounts of ghosts await you inside the pages of Uppernatural Haunts by the Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society. Get your autographed copy today at www.uppernaturalhaunts.com.
And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair with you. And Brad, as we sit in the first segment heading into the commercials, we're very excited to be welcoming in. We always like it when we can open the creaking door to a newcomer, a first-timer, and we are today.
Absolutely. And somebody that is known to the people.
Well, that's just it. He's a first-timer inside the creaking door, but the fans and the paranormal love him. If you've been to Michigan Paranormal Convention, you've seen him here as well. And we're very happy to be welcoming inside the creaking door for the very first time. Please give a warm welcome to Mr. Shane Pittman joining us this, episode. Shane, good afternoon, good evening, whatever time people are listening to us right now. We appreciate you being inside the creaking door with us.
Well, thank you so much for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Well, as we were talking in the first segment, we've been trying for a couple weeks to get this interview set up. First, I got sick and went down, and then you've been dealing with some sick family members, so hopefully we're on the other side of that right now. And how are you feeling? Are you doing okay?
Oh, I'm feeling great. I think my family is on the mend, and we're doing pretty good. It was rough for a little bit, but we're doing better now.
Good, good. And how about the holidays as far as Thanksgiving? Was everyone at least healthy for that? How'd that go for the family?
Well, I had one sick kid that was kind of quarantined in his room. But other than that, Thanksgiving went well, and we had a good time with family.
As far as you and home time right now, are you getting some of it? Is any type of production, or I know it looks like your events have calmed down for a bit and you were everywhere for a while. Has that all kind of settled down?
Yeah, it's settled down. I got a little bit of a break, and then going into the new year, it's going to be busy again. But, you know, I'm thankful to be able to travel and do all this stuff. But, yeah, I'm happy to have a little bit of a break, too.
Yeah,
oh, I bet.
Yeah, we understand that. Sometimes, you know, some things just don't mix. And for me, it's out there talking about ghosts and Christmas. I want them to be, although in the olden days, they used to tell ghost stories at Christmas.
Right.
But with that being said, I like to have my Christmas without my ghost stories and then get back to it into the first year. But we will touch more on your events coming up as well, Shane. But let's jump right into it. Let's get to know Shane Pittman a little bit more.
Yeah, you're at home in Georgia now, Shane. So off the road, having a little break. Are you originally from Georgia?
Yeah, so I'm originally from Georgia. I was born and mostly raised. I was a military brat, so I kind of traveled all around the country. And then we ended up back here after my dad got out of the Army. So, I was born and mostly raised here in Georgia.
Well, you still hold the drawl, and it's you can tell you've got the southern part.
If I get upset or worked up, the draw is even more pronounced.
Well, I hope I never witnessed that myself. So, what if you don't mind me asking, what parts of Georgia were you born and raised? My wife was born and raised in Georgia, so I've never been myself yet, but I hear her talking about it all the time.
Right, so I'm about an hour and 20 minutes outside of Atlanta.
Okay.
So pretty close to Fort Benning, Georgia. That's where my dad was before he got out.
All right.
So pretty close to Fort Benning, Georgia.
My wife lived in the small counties outside of it. Everything down there is counties. It's not towns. It's not cities. You guys talk about counties down there. And the Monroe area, I believe. But she was born in Atlanta, and she always loved the fact that she was born in the hospital that was featured on The Walking Dead in the first season when the whole world came collapsing in that the main hospital there in Georgia, or Atlanta, I mean, she was born in.
Right. And, you know, and that's what's cool about living here in the South in Georgia is me and my wife, we were both a part of the Walking Dead universe.
Were you really?
Of course, we were background actors and stuff. And my wife was a walker and also like an Oceansider, which is a women's group.
Oh, yeah.
Walking Dead universe. So it was pretty cool to be able to be a part of that because they filmed here in Georgia. pretty much about an hour or so away from us. So it was easy for us to get involved in that whole universe. And so, yeah, it's
That's
pretty
really cool,
having that type of stuff here in the South.
Did you did you guys do it right up through the final season, or has it moved on to filming other places now? How far into the TV series were you guys able to be a part of it?
So we were able to be a part of it up into like the 7th season. And then after that, what they were kind of shifting the focus of different things. But I know I was a hilltopper at one time and all that. It was really cool to be a part of that and to be able to meet Andrew Lincoln and Norman Reedus. And it's pretty cool watching them work. You know, you see the final product, but watching their process and how they work was really cool to witness.
Well, that is really cool. See, you could have been charging us double this whole time for a Paracon.
We brought it up.
Don't give me any ideas.
we're bringing in Shane Pittman and an actor from The Walking Dead. Come on, there's two avenues there, man. Do you want me to rep you, Shane? I'll get you more money. Except MI Paracon. We're going to leave that one where it's at.
Right. We'll leave that alone. Yeah.
Well, so at what part in life did you find this fascination with the paranormal field? Now, Shane?
Well, you know, it started with me whenever I was 6 years old. I had some weird, like, vision dream thing that was really profound at the time, which I didn't know was profound. But I went to my mother with it and told her, and she kind of validated some of what I witnessed at the time. And I can't really go into it. It's kind of involved.
Sure.
But I had that when I was 6 years old. And from there, in my teenage years and preteen years, I was experiencing strange and unusual things that quite frankly, was very frightening for me because I wasn't understanding what was going on. I grew up in a religious household, so all of these things that was happening to me I was told it was evil. It was something that I was being oppressed with. Something was not right, and that I needed to pray it away and make sure, you know, everything was good spiritually for me. So that's how my family approached that. As I got into my teenage years, you know, I started to research a lot and tried to read the books from the Holzers and from the pioneers in the field to try to soak up as much information as I could as to what was happening with me.
Was there a history in your...
Once I found out that there were people building things and engineers that were building different devices and stuff that could test different experiences I was having, whether testing the atmosphere, any atmospheric changes or anything like that, I was hooked at that point because I'm a tech guy anyway and I love technology. So whenever I knew that there were things that were out there that could help me in some capacity, I was hooked at that point. So that's kind of how it evolved. And then, you know, here I am today.
Was there any history in your family of paranormal occurrences, or is that something that just wouldn't be talked about?
Well, my mother talked about a lot. Like she would have a lot of different visions and things like that, but she always accredited it to having a spiritual experience, you know, in her Christian faith. Mm-hmm. It was never anything else other than it was a cut and dry, oh, God was showing her something, stuff like that. Mm-hmm. Gotcha. It was never anything outside of that possibility. So hers was kind of a narrow approach to what she thought she was experiencing. But, you know, I had more questions. You know, there was a lot of things that I was going through at the time that just didn't fit with that path that she was talking about. So that's what led me on the search of trying to figure out what exactly was going on, what was trying to reach out to me and communicate what was I going through, you know?
And were you born, born and raised in Southern Baptist as well? Because very strict.
Well, not Southern Baptist. It's even more bizarre. It was Pentecostal.
Okay, yeah.
So like, I'd go to churches where, you know, the main headliners were snakes.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
So, seeing that and seeing people jumping over pews, it was a very interesting experience. It really
was. But you almost got a double whammy there, Shane, because not only then were you raised in a very strict Christian home, but also a military home. And I'm assuming, I mean, you hear stories of military dads who can be very staunch and stern. And was that the case as well there from dad who just didn't want to hear about it? He was, you know, he was a military man.
You know, that's a very good question, and you're absolutely right. So it was one of those things where I would have experiences where I was afraid, and I would go to my parents with this, and my dad specifically would be like, you know, this is asinine. You don't need to be even worried about this. And if I was crying, he'd say, dry it up.
Yep.
You know, there's other things that you could be crying over, and this isn't one of those things. So, yeah, it was a very strict thing, and it was a very difficult thing to try to navigate, because you're having what you feel is real experiences, but at the same time you're being told, well, this is an oppression, this is an evil attack. Mm-hmm. And then on the flip side, you're being told, well, dry it up. It's not, you know, you need to be crying over things that are actually important. So mm-hmm. having that kind of conflict was very hard to navigate as a kid.
Then at some point, you said, once you got into your teen years, though, you started researching it yourself. Was that after you got out of the house? At some point, you moved out. I don't know if you went to college at some point, but was it after you moved out of the home when you felt you could start really looking into it?
Well, it started around 16 years old. I would go to libraries, and I would try to find any books that I could on the subject. But that was hush-hush. It was one of those things where I didn't really talk about it because I didn't want to have any of the backlash. And, sure. Of course, having any type of book or anything about the occult or anything like that, bringing that into a religious home is a big no-no.
Right.
Like any strife or anything in the house would be blamed on books that I would bring home or anything like that. So it was very hard to try to keep that secret, but I started when I was about 16 trying to research it.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, the majority of my research happened after I was out of the house.
So I know you said you didn't want to touch too much on the actual incident that happened or get in too deep to it, but in your research then, at 16 up till now, and in your research, have you at least gotten some type of understanding a little bit more of whatever you experienced when you were very much younger?
A little bit. But, you know, the more that I research this, and this is why I love the search of everything, right? Because the more I research, the more questions I have
yep.
than
yeah.
answers sometimes.
Yep.
Because you think that you have something pegged down, and you think that you have an understanding, and then you have a curveball being thrown at you, and a different way of trying to process and understand something that you thought you had a clear grasp on. It's one of those things where the more I research, the more I go down the rabbit hole, and it's really interesting. And it's frustrating at times because you want to have answers. I think all of us want to have the answers, but in this field, I mean, there's so much of the unknown out there that it's really hard to get those clear answers because there's always those curveballs that come your way.
You bet.
So you were in with The Walking Dead, obviously, before the days of Holzer Files. Was there a connection through there that got you in touch with the people with Holzer Files? Or how did that come about, your working with that show?
Well, that's another good question. Yeah, so the Walking Dead thing, that we knew some producers and stuff that said, hey, you know, we can get you on and get you to be a part of this, and plus you live really close. But those connections didn't have any connection with the Holzer Files. What's interesting about the Holzer Files is during my research and all that stuff when I was younger, I came across what they call the Holzer Method, where Hans Holzer would go with a trusted trans medium to do these investigations, and he wouldn't use the gadgets or anything mm-hmm. like that. He would just use a trusted trans medium that he felt would get the job done on his cases. But I didn't know exactly how the Holzer Method worked. So who did I reach out to? Alexandra Holzer.
Mm-hmm.
And this was probably 8 or 9 years before the show was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to work with her, and I got her first run on the Hunt with Holzer events that she was doing, and I helped her kind of put those together some. So I knew her about 8 or 9 years before the Holzer Files thing was even a thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember I was in executive management before the Holzer files, and I was in a hotel room in Coleman, Alabama. I'll never forget it. And I was at one of those low points, you know. I was away from my family a lot. I was away from them 6 days a week. I would come home on Sunday and sleep because I was exhausted, and then I would fly back out or I would drive back out.
Wow.
Monday morning. So I didn't really get to see my family much, and I was in this hotel room just, you know, frustrated and kind of lost. And I had a producer buddy of mine say, hey, you should submit your stuff for this project. I think you'd be a good fit for. So I just sent in a quick email with my headshot and everything. And within 30 minutes, I get a call from the casting director. And she's like, hey, we're interested in talking to you about this project. It's about a famous parapsychologist reopening his case file. And I said, well, can you tell me the name of the show, or can you tell me who the parapsychologist is? And they're like, no, unfortunately, we can't say anything. I said, well, can I guess? And you tell me yes or no. And she said, yes. And I said, it's Hans Holzer, isn't it? And she was dumbfounded, like, how the hell did you know this? And I said, well, you know, I know his daughter. I've worked with his daughter, and I kind of had a feeling that this was the direction. And from there, you know, had some interviews and stuff, flew out to L.A., and that was all she wrote.
Awesome. And you getting the chance to work with Alexandria, how cool she – I mean, that's paranormal royalty blood right there. And
Right. It was very cool, and you know the stories that she had behind the scenes about her father, and just being able to get those stories before I even knew that the Holzer files was even a thing,
mm-hmm.
just to hear those stories early on was really cool, because I was on the search, right? I was always trying to figure out different methods and stuff that could correlate to maybe some of the things that were happening with me that could help me, and just to have that interaction with her even before the show was a thing was really cool. And to be able to work with her after the fact was just an honor, you know?
Yeah, and how unique it is, the fact that you are such a techie side of things. You love that part of the field, but Alexandra will be the first one to tell you that her dad, if he was alive today, would be screaming at all the technology in the field because he was such a stripped-down kind of guy when it came to researching.
Oh, yeah. He hated technology. Mm-hmm. In fact, he called it rubbish on numerous occasions, right? And he was really adamant about, hey, all you need is a trusted transmedium, and that's it. You don't need anything else. But even talking to Alexandra, she feels like if he were still alive today, he would be more receptive to it, because he was always the type of guy to try to get a better understanding of what was going on. So she thought that he would be more receptive today than he was back then, because we've had advancements that actually do help and further the field. So, if we did the Holzer files back when he was still alive, it would have been, that would have been a troubling thing. I don't think I might have been out of a job at that point.
Which it's interesting, because Dr. Holzer was so widespread in the paranormal field. He had books out there on everything mm-hmm. from witchcraft, ufology, and, of course, most well-known for the ghost side of things. But it fascinates me that someone that was so involved in so many different areas was kind of closed off when it came to tech and any of these advancements.
Yeah, you know, you're exactly right. He even did spirit photography. I know he had multiple books mm-hmm. about that. So there was a lot of different things that he wrote about. And the spirit photography, I mean, you're using a camera, you're using some outside tech to you know, document some of this stuff. So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I think what it was during that time is it was in his later years, and he was seeing like these things, the boxes that would light up and all this stuff. And I think he just thought on the surface level, oh, this is hogwash. This is stuff, you know, you don't need this stuff. But again, like I said, we've advanced so much in the field that I think that he would be more receptive now because we've come a long way since those times.
Yeah. For any of our listeners right now, if you want to kind of get a better idea of what Shane was talking about, what he learned through Holzer's daughter, Alexandra, and what it was like behind the scenes, growing up Holzer, which was her book. Yeah, I don't even know if it's still in print. I hope it is. That is such a fascinating book because it really does. The title says it all. It's her experience of having Hans Holzer as her father and what it was like growing up in that shadow and that life. Really interesting book.
Yeah.
Right. It's a very interesting book. And like you said, it's very eye-opening. I mean, it's something where she chronicles growing up, being around him. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, very good books. Yeah.
So you mentioned you studied Hans when you were growing up, Shane, and you read his books and all. Was there any one case that you got to revisit while filming Holzer Files that really stuck out as, yes, this is the one that I want to get into and see if there's still something there from Hans's research?
Yeah, you know, one of the biggest cases, I think, for me that was interesting that I wanted to explore more was the Devil in Texas case that he documented. And that was the one where we revisited the case with Lydia, and she was having some PK, some psychokinesis stuff, and she was having experiences. And revisiting that case where he was dealing with a young boy that was experiencing things with his family, and he was being heavily oppressed, and his family was being heavily oppressed. And we revisited that case, and unfortunately, you know, the boy that was that Hans was trying to help at the time, unfortunately, took his own life as a result of all of the stuff that he was going through during that case. So that was one of the most impactful for me because, you know, it was a real family dealing with real things back then that Hans was, he was doing everything he could to try to help this family. And unfortunately, you know, was unable to reach the young boy at that time. But us being able to visit a different family that was experiencing similar things and to help her, I think was really rewarding for us. Mm-hmm. So that's one case that I really wanted to touch back on because they were having experiences back then with their family. They were having things appearing, like just appearing out of thin air. Were having dead bugs being pelted on them every time they would turn off the lights in their bedroom. And they would turn it on, and their whole bedroom floor would be full of, like, dead bugs.
Good Lord.
And they would clean up the dead bugs, right? And they would turn off the light to get, try to go back to sleep. And they would feel things being pelted at them. They'd turn on the lights, and bugs would be all over the floor again.
Getting the chills
really
just thinking about it.
Bizarre things happening with that family.
Yeah. Paranormal bug zapper.
Yeah, that's for real. That's a new concept we need to try to think of. Paranormal bug zapper.
I think we can market that.
I think so. I think we just found our moneymaker. Shane Pittman is our guest right now inside the creaking door. And I got to tell you, Shane, kudos to that series, Holzer Files. It was the first ghost investigation type show that I got excited for in a long time. And because it was based off of one of our heroes growing up when Brad and I were just young, way back when growing up, but we had Hans Holzer and we had Ed and Lorraine Warren were our go-tos back then. And so to watch his cases come to life through you and Dave and Cindy, and to hear those original audio recordings, man, I lived for those moments watching that show.
Well, you know, I really appreciate those kind words. It was an honor of a lifetime just to be able to be a part of that. And those recordings, I mean, we had so much more. That's the heartbreaking thing. That's the bittersweet thing of not being renewed for a third season. We had so many case files, so many different recordings and stuff that people have not heard yet that would terrify you even more. Oh. Like Sybil Leek and Ethel Myers, I mean, just listening to them whenever they're in trance is a really bizarre thing to hear. Mm. But we had so many recordings for everybody to hear.
Yeah. So then you took a little bit of time off after Holzer Files was no longer being filmed. And, well, you decided to come out of the barn screaming, didn't you, man? You came out big with this Halloween season and on Netflix, trending as one of the top watch shows for how many weeks? 28 Days Haunted.
Yeah, you know, that was another cool thing because, again, I got to follow in the footsteps of a pioneer in the field, Hans Holzer, and then we got to touch base on a theory from Ed and Lorraine Warren, which is the 28 Days Haunted concept. And that was a really rewarding thing. We were number six globally on Netflix TV shows watched, over 30 million hours viewed.
Wow.
Just a phenomenal thing. I'm so happy that I was able to be a part of that. It was one of the hardest things that I've ever done, though, because 28 days in a reportedly haunted location without communication with my family was the hardest part.
So you actually did not get you didn't get to call your family. You didn't get to check in at all during those 28 days.
No, we didn't. We didn't get to communicate with them. In fact, I had a sick kid at the time that I didn't know about until after filming had wrapped up. Like, I had no clue that he was even sick. He had caught COVID at that time, and I had no clue that he had it until after filming had wrapped, and I was on my way home.
So they literally took away your cell phones, took away laptops, everything. I know that's the way they kind of set things up at the start of it.
They took away our cell phones, took away anything. Like, we didn't have TVs in that we could watch. We didn't have Wi-Fi. No radios, nothing like that, and we weren't even able to leave the location.
Yeah, I mean the whole idea of it, and you know, while I was watching it and trying to put myself into that, and of course we're just watching the edited versions, but think of you guys who are there 24/7 for 28 days, no contact to the outside world. I mean, the isolation on top of the fact that you're dealing with unseen entities and you're trying to figure that out at the same time. I mean, that's almost a double getting it from both sides. And I mean, I could see where that could almost a little stir crazy.
Well, yeah, that was part of the whole experiment is the psychological side of things and then the spiritual side of things. And I'll be honest with you, like after 7 days, I was ready to hang it up because there's, you're dealing with missing your family terribly.
Yeah.
And then you're dealing with a lot of things that you can't really understand what's going on. Like, I was having vivid dreams about the location, some of the things that happened previously that I've never had in my life, in my whole career, even doing this and searching the strange and unusual. I never had experiences like that to that degree.
Wow.
And just having that stuff going on nonstop, not being able to talk to anybody except for my teammates, it was really, really difficult. And but it's something that was rewarding at the same time. I took a lot away from it, and I've learned a lot. And it was an experience that I would do again, but it's something that was really tough. One thing I do want to say, though, is like, yeah, you're seeing edited versions, and I'm so surprised that they edited what they did in a 3.5-hour series total, because each team filmed 24/7, so it was 600-something hours per team. So you combine that's over 2,000 to 3,000 hours of footage that they condensed down to 3.5 hours for the whole series.
Yeah.
There was so much that people were not able to see that we got that was just mind-blowing as well.
And you had such an intriguing location where your team was at in Denver, and some of the things you came up with that you guys hit spot on. Were you surprised afterwards to find out how dead on some of your investigation ended up being?
I was absolutely floored. I'm telling you, like, especially some of the dreams that I had that later was validated by the producers. I remember them telling me after a dream, I was like, man, I had a weird dream. And I was just saying, I thought it was just, you know, a dream and nothing more than that. And they were like, Shane, I don't know how to tell you this. And then they went into telling me what happened back in the 70s.
Wow.
And my eyes started welling up with tears. And I'm like, I don't know how to process this because we had no prior knowledge of the location. I have no clue what is happening right now. And it was very hard to process, and I'm still processing it. It's over a year ago that we filmed, and I'm still dealing with different dreams at times that I'm going through, that I'm still trying to process exactly what happened. You know, it's one of those things that, of course, I research and search for this stuff on a regular basis, but it's one of those things where it's hard for me to wrap my head around exactly what's going on.
Well, it kind of answers my question, but maybe we can hone in on something a little bit more specific. I wanted to ask you, after 28 days, after all that filming and the mental that side of it that you're going through, along with the spiritual side, after you got home and tried to decompress, was there something, an incident or something that just kind of still haunted you for a while after you got back?
Oh, yeah, multiple instances. For a long time, I was having regular dreams of people walking by my bedside. Mm-hmm. And it would be different people each dream.
Wow.
And some would be frantic, like, please help me, I don't know where I am. Others would just smile at me and tell me that they have something that they want me to communicate with somebody else, which I had no clue who that somebody else was.
Dang.
And then others would just be smiling and walking past me on my bedside like they were just passing on by, that they were just walking through.
That's creepy in itself.
Yeah.
But I was having those pretty regularly. They've died down a little bit, but they have not gone away. I still have dreams like that. This is over a year later.
Yeah. There was one episode that you went into a sensory deprivation tank in the yard. Do you think that opened you up more to these experiences?
That's a good question too. I think it did. That was something, an out of the box idea that I had. It's like, you know, let's try something different. I mean, you don't really see this being done too much in this paranormal space like this. And so let's try something different. And, while I was in that tank, I was in there for a period of time, and I was seeing images and flashes of things that I hope I never see again. It was deaths and stuff like that. Oof. And I think after that experience, it opened something up, and it hasn't fully closed.
That's the way your dreams sound, anyways, when you're explaining it to us. It's almost like, from the other side, they're trying to use you now as almost the conduit to send messages, you know, like a psychic medium. So it sounds like something might have opened up a little bit more.
Well, right. Maybe I opened something up temporarily as like a beacon. Like, well, they see, okay,
yeah,
this person could see it.
Right.
Or something. I don't know. And see, I'm not one of these types of guys to label myself, I'm a psychic medium. You know, because there's a lot out there that will call themselves that. Mm-hmm. And you know, not saying that they're legitimate or not. It's just one of those things where I don't want to label myself something like that. But I can say with certainty that I'm experiencing these things. And I you know, it's just one of those things I'm trying to navigate through and try to figure out, you know, why it's happening, what's going on.
So you've already said you would do it again if Netflix or someone else wanted to do it. But what if they came to you and said, Shane, we're doubling down, 56 days haunted. could you do that one?
Okay, well, that may be a straw that breaks the camel's back.
Yeah.
56 days, I don't know about all that now. I mean, 28 Ooh. Days was difficult enough.
Yeah.
I mean, it was hard for me to do the 28 days.
I know, Brad. I remember Brad coming to me saying, I couldn't do what they're doing. I couldn't be disconnected from the real world and my own family for that long. And I think that's a question a lot of people would have to ask themselves, if they could pull it off, how you did.
Yep. Well, and, you know, I hear a lot of people, especially on social media, they'll be like, oh, I could do that with my eyes closed. But what you don't realize is you're also with teammates that some you've worked with and some you haven't, but anybody that's locked in a location for that long without being able to leave, you're going to get stir crazy, but you're also going to get on each other's nerves. Like me and Ray, for instance, he would like to cook a lot. And there's this one story, I wish they would have put it in the show, where he was trying to cook these like 4-day old pork chops that had browning. It was browning without like putting it in a pan.
Oh God!
And I was like, dude, I am not eating that. There's no way in the world you can cook it until it's like well done, and I am not going to eat it. And he was like, oh man, it's fine. What are you talking about? And he was getting bent out of shape over it, and finally it ended where he just took the whole like four pork chops and tossed it in the trash and started cussing me out. I was like, well, look, dude, I'll eat my bowl of cereal. That's what I'm going to eat. I'm not going to eat that 4 or 5 day old pork chop just
rotten
because
meat.
You think it's going to be okay.
Oh, man.
You mentioned you're surprised some of the stuff they cut out. Is there anything that you can share that of a paranormal nature that didn't make the cut that you thought should have been in?
Sure. So, in our location, there was this tunnel, really creepy tunnel. And if anybody's watched the Holzer Files, they saw how many times Dave would put me in the creepiest, worst
poor Shane
ever.
Hashtag.
He would put me in the worst locations, right? So I was like, hey, this is my opportunity to kind of flip the script a little bit and do this to one of my teammates. So I took Ray and I told him, okay, man, we're going to do the Gonsfeld experiment inside the tunnel. And that Gonsfeld, you know, is where you just put covering over your eyes and,
right,
and a red light and people can see different shadows and stuff. That's right. Just a condensed version. So I put him under and I told Amy, which is our other teammate, I was like, all right, let's go. And we walked out of the tunnel. And I had a recorder sitting in there, and I closed the door and left him in there for over an hour and 45 minutes by himself.
Wow.
And I wish they would have shown that because we got some really interesting evidence out of that, and they cut that, unfortunately, but that's something I wish people would have seen.
How did he feel coming out of that?
Oh, he was like, of course you would do something like that. Because we worked together for a while, but he was like, man, I was talking and having conversations, and I thought that y'all were in here witnessing it, and here I am talking by myself, and, you know, I could have been attacked or whatever, and y'all are nowhere to be found. he wasn't that appreciative of it, but, you know, I thought I had to take my opportunity while I could.
Right. So you mentioned that you are a fan of the techie side of things. You've really kind of gotten into that, although it sounds like the spiritual side is really becoming a thing for you now, too. But you've really gravitated to the techie side. Anything new you've been working with lately that may not be out there in the general public yet that you're really excited about?
Yeah. So there's a piece of equipment from Bill Chappell that I've been using a lot lately, and they're called Mind Blocker Glasses. So we're used to the Estes method of,
right,
you know, sensory deprivation and blindfold and hearing white noise and all this stuff. But with the mind blocker, what that does is it's sunglasses with like LEDs flashing at a certain frequency.
Mm-hmm.
And Bill came up with this theory that, you know, the lights flashing at certain frequencies can trick the brain into going into like a semi-hypnotic state. And there's also earbuds that are set to a certain frequency of audio that is designed to do the same thing. So it's basically a sensory overload.
Mm-hmm.
And in certain situations, we've gotten some really interesting results with the mind blocker glasses. So that's a new piece of tech that I've really been using a lot, and I'm really excited to see what kind of data we can get from using those in certain situations.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll have to be watching more for that. All right. So, Shane, we appreciate your time. We want to get things wrapped up here quickly, but we got a couple more questions for you.
Yeah. What do you've still got your Searchers project coming out, correct?
Yeah. So we still have that going on. There's some things that we're working on that I can't really talk about yet.
Sure.
But, yeah, there's some things in the pipeline for that we're working on, and we should be making announcements pretty soon.
Excellent.
And as far as your travels and your expeditions as well, what else do we have coming in the new year? Can you touch too much on that as well, or is that still kind of hush-hush?
Sure. So in March, I'm going to be doing a tour in Savannah, Georgia, where we're going to be exploring different places around there. We're going to be at Moon River and the Marshall House and staying at some really nice hotels in the area. So it's going to be really cool to just tour around and do some investigations there. Then, of course, we got Michigan Paracon, which I'm really excited about that we're doing.
Yes,
next
you
year.
Are.
Yeah. Oh, I know. It's an undertaking, but y'all do such a great job, and it's humbling to be a part of that. So, yeah, I'm excited for that as well.
Yeah,
we are certainly excited to have you back for sure.
And I think you are doing the Potographs event in March, I believe, too.
Yes, doing a Potographs event, which is a really, really good charity. And y'all are going to be there for that, aren't you?
Yes, yeah, we are.
Tim and I are at that one as well. That somewhere in Wisconsin. Pembine?
Pembine, I believe,
Pembine,
yes.
Wisconsin.
Yes.
That's, I think, March 18th.
So, you know, just working with Tim and his passion for the project and the reason behind the whole charity is just amazing. So yeah, it's going to be a really, really good event. I'm excited about it.
Yeah. He's too. Done so much good for so many animal shelters across the country.
Even ours right here.
Yes.
Yep.
He has.
Yeah, I agree. He's doing a lot of great work.
Yep. Well, and then we're going to be spending the week before Halloween with you in England this year.
Yeah. Can't wait for that one.
Sage Paracon.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's my first time in the UK, actually, which is going to be really interesting. But yeah, I'm super psyched about that as well.
Yeah, that's always a fun show. And if you've got the extra time to kick around England, this is going to be your first time as well, isn't it, Tim?
For me, it is too. Yeah. So I'm hoping we're going to be able to take a little extra time, either pre or post, and get a little bit more of the country in as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm going to try to do that. I think it'd be really good to do. I mean, it's a once-in-a-lifetime thing.
Yeah.
It's your first time going. Yeah, I want to try to make the most of it.
Yeah. And anybody that would like to join us for that, too, I believe there still are some tickets for sale. Last I talked to MJ, the director, I believe all of the VIP seats were sold out on that one.
Okay.
But we will be posting up on the Creaking Door Facebook page, all of our social media accounts will have more info on that if you're interested. And that's something, again, you know, you'd want to plan that a ways out, because tickets usually do sell out for that event.
For sure. And, of course, it's a bit of a travel, so you're going to want to make sure that's planned. Just before Halloween, if you don't want to miss Halloween stateside, you'll be back in time for it. So don't worry about that, but it's just before Halloween for sure. All right, Shane, if people want to keep up with you and all your travels and your exploits and everything going on, what's the best way for them to follow you?
You can follow me on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. You just type in @StarringShane or type in Shane Pittman. You can find me there. And I've got a website, officialshanepittman.com, where you can find out all that I'm doing.
All right. Outstanding. From the Holzer Files and most recently 28 Days Haunted on Netflix. Check it out. It is Shane Pittman joining us inside the Creaking Door. Shane, thank you so much for taking time to be with us.
Thank you all so much. It was an honor. Thank you.
All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more on the way from Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by Eagle Play.
Our world is filled with hidden mysteries and wonders for those who open themselves up to possibilities that science has not yet explained. Tim Ellis and Brad Blair, two of the authors who brought you Upernatural Haunts, Upper Peninsula Paranormal Research Society Case Files, and hosts of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, continue their exploration of the bizarre and otherworldly in their latest book, Great Lakes, Monsters, and Mysteries. Join Brad and Tim as they recount some of the myriad legends of the lore of the United States Great Lakes region, along with Monsters of the Deep, you'll read of UFOs and alien encounters, shapeshifters, cryptids, both winged and terrestrial, imps, fairies, gnomes, black-eyed kids, haunted lighthouses, and phantom schooners. Tim and Brad also share some of the ghost stories and mysterious happenings shared from their listeners of Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Get your copy of Great Lakes Monsters and Mysteries today at www.upernaturalhaunts.com.
And
And welcome back inside Creaking Door Paranormal Radio. Tim Ellis, Brad Blair with you as we are just wrapping up our interview with the one, the only Mr. Shane Pittman. Easy interview. I love it when the guests come in and they just know how to take it away. I mean,
makes
Shane
our job easy.
Yes, it does. He was a great interview.
I never knew that he was involved with The Walking Dead.
I didn't either.
And we've known Shane for a couple of years.
Yeah.
It's not like this is a cold call. Hey, do you want to come on the show?
Yep.
Yeah, we've had beers with Shane on a couple occasions in the past and plan to in the future as well.
Much more. Especially in England. I plan on enjoying myself quite a lot over there.
Yes, yeah. You will. Yeah. You will.
But yeah, so thank you so much, Shane Pittman, for coming on Inside Creaking Door. It was great to have him in for the first time, and great interview for sure. Learned a lot about him and his experiences with the Holzer Files, the Holzer family, and on 28 Days Haunted.
Yeah, and you see, most people that you see pop in on TV shows, and like the Holzer Files, got two seasons, very good show.
Yeah.
And then disappeared. Usually you see these people kind of slide off with the show.
Mm-hmm.
Shane kept going. The 28 Days Haunted with Netflix, which was very intriguing,
yeah.
Which we learned more of on today's interview. Mm-hmm. But I know he's got other projects in the works, and he just keeps going. That guy's a workhorse.
He is. He reminds me a lot of Dustin Perry. Always kept himself out in front of things, even after his time with Ghost Hunter stopped for a while. He just kept doing his thing, and people, he's just a good guy. People wanted to be a part of what he was doing, and it seems the same as going for Shane, who's just working his tail off out there.
Yeah. And as we mentioned, we're going to be running into Shane a few times on the road this year.
Yeah.
At least. We've got a handful of events already signed. We've got a few that are in the works but have not been announced yet.
Yeah, we were hoping they'd be ready for this one. Maybe they'll be ready for our end-of-the-year holiday show coming up. But our first one we're going to be at is going to be the weekend of February 10th and 11th at the Paranormal Unity at the R.
Right. That one's in Auburn, St. Auburn, Illinois.
Yeah.
This is our first time going down there.
Yeah, but looking forward to that one. We appreciate being asked to come on down, and it's supporting the Lost Limbs Foundation, so a great cause, and we're happy to be a part of it. And then coming in, of course, after that, well, again, we've got a few other ones, but it'll be March, Potographs Parafest 4 in Ann Arbor. I'm looking forward to that one.
Right. That one's got a great lineup to it too. John Zaffis is coming in. Dustin Perry, who we were just talking about, is going to be there. Mr. Richard Estep. He's coming in on that one. Really great lineup he's got going in. And that's our first Potographs event in March. We're doing the second one with Shane that we spoke on a little bit earlier in Pembine, Wisconsin, coming up on the 18th.
That we are. And then it looks like from there, the other ones that we haven't signed yet that we can't touch on, but then let's fast forward to, of course, MI Paracom the 13th.
That's going to be fun.
Yes, it is.
We've got a lot in the works for that. Stay tuned. If you're not following the MI Paracom Facebook and Twitter pages, hop on there. They're getting updated daily at this point with new announcements. And, of course, you can get your tickets online at miparacon.com. Any of these other events, we'll keep you posted well on our social media with links to get your tickets, what's available, what you can do, what you can't do. And, MI Paracon, we've got a couple things then in between there and our trip to England that we can't quite touch on yet. But, the big one for Halloween season for us this year, October 26th through the 29th. Sage Paracon is going on in Coventry, England.
Mm-hmm, you bet. And MJ Dixon, of course, who puts it on. She does an amazing job. She'll be there. Again, Richard Estep will be there. Shane Pittman as well. Mm-hmm. And others still to be announced.
Yes. Yeah. That's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, looking forward to that as well. So our 2023 calendar is already starting to fill up. We're excited about that. But until then, we're going to enjoy the holidays.
That's right. Yep. And if you're looking for last-minute Christmas gifts, hop on
UpernaturalHaunts.com. Yeah.
You can pick up copies of Tim and I's books, Upernatural Haunts, Great Lakes Monsters and Mysteries. Mm-hmm. If you hit us up directly on the site, we can get those personalized for you, get them out before Christmas time, and you can stick those in their stockings this year.
Yes, for the monster and the ghost lover on your Christmas list, we can definitely make them happy with Upernatural Haunts and Great Lakes Monsters and Mysteries. Again, at UpernaturalHaunts.com. All right, Brad, I think that's going to do it for our mid-December episode here.
Yes, and hopefully everyone has a great Christmas season.
Yes.
I know we talked about how much people have been sick and getting sick. Stay well, stay healthy, enjoy the holidays, enjoy your family.
You bet, enjoy it for sure. Merry Christmas and happy holidays. Again, we're hoping to have one more show for you before the end of the year. But on behalf of all of our engineers behind the scenes and my co-host in crime, Brad Blair, my name is Tim Ellis. Thanks for being inside the Creaking Door Paranormal Radio, powered by Eagle play.
The creaking door.